Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in. This is the Battleground State Report. Glad to have you with us. And as always, encourage you to go to the website, battlegroundstatenews.com. That's battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. Battleground State News on Facebook, where you'll find links each day on stories that are taking place in the battleground states, the 17 or so states that will dictate likely control of the U.S. House, the U.S. Senate, and the White House after the 2020 election cycle. And we've got a lot to get into this week. But basically, you know, these battleground states are where the fight will be fought and where the battle will be won. And while the national media continues to look at what's going on in California and New York, that's interesting, but it has nothing to do with who will win the White House.
Yeah, there are basically 13 blue states that are going to be blue no matter what, and 20 red states that are going to be red no matter what. Now, there are 17 states that we call battleground states. I'm going to describe them a little differently this time. I'm going to start with the four states that President Trump won in 2016 that he could lose in 2020, depending on how things turn out. And that is, I would put in that category right now, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. Those are the four in that category. Then you have a category of battleground states that President Trump lost in 2016. And in that category, you have Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, Minnesota, and New Hampshire, and Virginia. And then Maine is kind of with an asterisk, but yeah, he lost the state. He lost one congressional district, but he won one congressional district. And then the other battleground states to look at are Florida, North Carolina, Missouri, Iowa, Indiana, and Ohio.
You know, Indiana seems to be moving more strongly back into the red column. Ohio, President Trump won by, what, like 9 points?
9 points, and he looks strong there.
Seems
right
to be
now.
Solidifying it.
You know, to be solidifying, yeah.
In Florida, Ron DeSantis has like a 69% approval, has like 40-something percent approval in the African-American community.
Yeah.
When you look at Florida right now, Ron DeSantis may help lead the way for Donald Trump to kind of move that out of the even contested category.
I mean, it's more than a year and a half now until the big day. The big day when we hopefully get to see the liberal heads explode again after midnight. But, you know, you don't know. But right now, I think you're right. I think also North Carolina probably leaning towards Trump, not quite as much as Florida. And then Virginia.
Chaos abounds
there.
Chaos
in Virginia. The trend, long-term trend has been moving blue there. It's been, you know, blue for a number of elections in the presidential cycle. As, you know, Northern Virginia becomes dominant in the state and dominated by, you know, federal bureaucrats who lean left.
Doug always complains that I ask him tough questions out of the blocks, and so I'll continue that trend.
He complains the same thing of me as well. He doesn't like those questions.
All right, the Democrats have taken control, Doug, in several states, and they've, you know, imposed what I think in Minnesota they're looking at a 20-cent a gallon gas tax increase. In other states, they're immediately raising taxes. In Colorado, they've now passed legislation, thanks to the Democrat control of the State House, the State Senate, and the governor's office, to basically eradicate the oil and gas industry in Colorado, putting people out of work.
Sounds like a really good plan.
They are pursuing the policies that have destroyed places like, well, Venezuela and Detroit and Chicago. Is this overreach going to create a backlash among voters in those states where they've just been given power?
Well, sure, it could, right? I mean, as you have often talked about, how local politics, you know, plays a role, right, in how people feel at the time they go to the voting booth, and maybe which party do they blame about one thing or another, right? Hasn't it gotten to the point that we vote against certain things more than we do? Maybe it motivates us more than maybe being in favor. So sure, I mean, you raise my gas taxes, you hurt my job or something like that, it's going to make a difference. You know, Tim Ryan, I think it is, the congressman from Ohio, you know, is another one that's joined in the race. I think it's 21 Democrats now that are running. And you know, one of the motivations, at least he's putting forward, is this idea that, you know, some of these policies are costing jobs in the Midwest states, and he thinks he can pick up a few.
Well, and again, he's going to have to oppose the Democrats' policies as he runs to get the Democrat nomination, and kind of the leading bright lights on the Democratic side of the aisle are these liberals who are trying to you know, embrace socialism, embrace the same policies that that Ryan and some Democrats say they oppose. And yet they're running against the stream of their own party. By the way, another one that's apparently going to jump in the next week, Eric Swalwell, the nitwit congressman from California. You're killing me, Swalls. I mean, apparently he's wanting to get into the race for president as well, because there's just this dramatic clamor that we need more Eric Swalwell.
I have the solution to this problem with all the Democrats. What we have to do is we have to ban mirrors in Washington, D.C. because all of these Democrats look in the mirror and see a president.
Well, Senator Michael Bennet, Colorado's also was on television yesterday saying he apparently has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, but he said if he's cancer-free, he's getting in the race. So, we may have 25 or 30 now.
Because Hickenlooper running from Colorado is just as not enough Democrats from Colorado running for president.
Well, when you look at the crowd that's in, I don't blame some of these Democrats. They look at the people that are in and go, dudes, yeah, I'm head and shoulders above any of those people.
Yeah, I think Michael's right. It's like they look in the mirror and they see a president. Just like, you know, it's like the old meme that's out there. You know, the little puppy looks in the mirror and he sees this big, you know, wolf like dog or something. So it's the same kind of thing going on, I guess. And yeah, you're right. I mean, they look at some of these candidates in the race and they're like, hey, how about me? I might win. You know.
Of course, if you look at some of the early polling, the American voters are looking and going, who? Never heard of these folks. And frankly, they're not impressing me much, to quote the old Shania Twain song. Maybe we'll come back with a little Shania Twain. You don't impress me much.
I like that.
This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. You'll find links to some of the stories we're talking about. And we'll turn to Wisconsin next. Maybe a good omen for the president and the Republicans with a Supreme Court victory. Narrow though it may be, maybe it's a good sign for the future in Wisconsin for Republicans. We'll talk more in a moment.
State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
I've known a few guys who thought they were pretty smart, but you've got being right down to an art. You think you're a genius, you drive me up the wall. You're a regular original, know-it-all. Okay, so you're a rocket scientist. That don't impress me much.
Yeah, Shania Twain giving us her opinion of the 20 or so Democratic Party candidates. You don't impress me much. You think you know it all. You think you're special. They all do, but do they really impress the voters all that much? And again, when you're looking at the polling, Joe, I grip you a lot, Biden is apparently the leading contender, and yet has had a extraordinarily rough week with, what are we up to now, 5-6 women claiming he treated them inappropriately. Nobody's claiming he actually groped them or gripped them, but the impeding upon their personal space and then his apology video, the only good thing I can say about it, Doug, is that he didn't stop in the middle and go, I'm going to get me a beer. Other than that, it would have been an epic disaster.
Oh, wow. You know, of course, Joe doing a little hair sniffing, I think is the way they described it. You know, he puts his hands on their shoulders, sniffs their hair. Nothing here, you know, has been said to be of a sexual nature, right? I wonder if he gets through this. But, you know, again, he's got to deal, as you pointed out, with these other candidates like Tim Ryan. Some of his views actually go against the modern day Democrat Party, right? So that, you know, this allegation or that allegation might make a difference, but it may be worse for him than that.
Well, in the Biden case, as the numbers continue to go up, it's not a Me Too movement, it's a Me Everybody movement. I mean, has he not sniffed anybody's hair?
Yeah, Steve, it's like the guy has sort of transported across time, right? I mean, he's a previous generation where this wasn't discussed much, or it wasn't really considered to be, I guess, as much out of the norm as it is today. But the modern day Democrat Party, of course, has been sort of the, we push everyone out. I mean, Kristen Gillibrand, you know, was a big Clinton supporter right back in the 90s. Now she doesn't like Bill Clinton because of the allegations. It took her a while to figure it out, I guess. But the point is that they've changed, and how much is that going to make a difference? Would they rather just win the election, right, with a Joe Biden and overlook these kind of things? Or, you know, will it make a difference in the voting booth?
I like Joe Biden's defense that, hey, I touch and feel everybody. I mean, old and young, you know, fat, ugly, good-looking, man, woman. I do this to everybody. Therefore, wow. I should get a pass.
But, you know, Doug, you make a really good point about this being a different era. Now, Joe Biden was first elected to the United States Senate in 1969. He was only 29 at the time. But if you go back and you look at, let's say, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and the standard kind of Democratic operative behavior, there was a lot of touchy-feely going on.
Just in the Kennedy meetings alone.
Well, LBJ would have been like this, you know.
But I mean,
absolutely.
Again, back in the day, though, you had the two-handed handshake. You know, right. They'd grab the hand, and then you'd put the other hand over them. I mean, in the South, I mean, you kind of do the cheek kiss, you know, for women, whether young, old, you know, ugly or great looking. All that personal connection that he came up during that era of glad-handing politics, of grip and grin, is now being judged by a different standard. It's like, fine, change the rules, but don't apply the rules to past behavior.
But the thing about old Joe, creepy Joe, even those old standards, he kind of went a little beyond them, didn't he? If you look at it, it's kind of cringeworthy if you watch some of these things.
It's definitely creepy, and particularly with the young girls, you know, the little girls, and they look uncomfortable,
they
should.
Uncomfortable. There was one particular one where he was... Let's just say he was being, there was a little girl and he would, his hands were kind of stroking her hair and it's like, it was touching her neck and it was like, you could see she was like 8 or 9 years old. She's thinking, get this guy away from me.
Yeah, who's this old guy that's, you know, glomming all over me.
Touching me a little bit too much here.
And there was another one of these videos where I think it was one of the Republicans' young daughters, I mean, like quickly walked past him. I mean, it's like she'd already gotten the early warning of, you know, hey, stay away from me. So, I mean, she like dashed past him. You would have thought she was, you know, Usain Bolt in a 100-yard dash. She dashed right past
him. The new event in 2020 will be the Biden dash.
I do have a suggestion for the Biden campaign team.
Yeah.
They just need to get some of those, you know, big oven mitts, those big thick oven mitts, and make sure that he campaigns wearing those so that nobody will think that Joe's going to be getting a little too grippy on them. Just the Joe Biden logoed oven mitts may be the campaign item of the year.
So, Doug, doesn't his wife say to him, Joe, hands off?
He says he's going to be girls. Right, he says he's going to be more respectful. He gets it. He hears it. This kind of thing. I mean, you and I, you know, another show had talked this week about how is it possible? I think you disagree on it, but is it possible that, you know, by this thing coming out, even though it's probably coming from Bernie Sanders or one of the Democrats, that you know, it actually helps him in the long run because he kind of gets it out there. He hasn't even announced he's running yet, and then by the time he does, okay, we've heard all about Creepy Joe. Now let's get on to the other things. Is it possible it works out okay for him in that?
Well, maybe in Bernie we'll respond, I have not touched a woman in the last 40 years. My wife can verify that. I have not touched a woman in 40 years.
That's a pretty good Bernie Sanders.
That is a good Bernie Sanders.
That's a
Sanders,
good Bernie
actually.
Sanders.
Yeah.
Wait. Let me get my hair all messed up.
You do that one, I'll do my Bill Clinton. You know, it's like, hey, Joe just thought about stuff I used to do. You know, that kind of thing. So we can continue this on. But, I just wonder if it's going to help him in the long run because people, it's kind of like, you know, with Donald Trump. Oh, I've heard all these allegations. Okay, now what's next?
Well,
right? But
the problem with Joe, I don't think he can help himself. I think he'll be out on the campaign trail, and then you'll see he'll be a little overly familiar. And it'll just...
It'll throw him completely off his game because he'll be so afraid of where the lines, what am I doing, that it'll get in his head. I think the advantage he has is that people are pretty forgiving and they go, well, that's just Joe, and you've got all these media types that are defending him. His problem is it's all visual. People can see it.
They can see it and judge for themselves, and it just looks weird. Now, the impact on battleground states, I got this angle here for you guys. Tell me what you think of this. We talked about the three most at-risk states for Donald Trump that he won, battleground states he won last time around, are Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. There was a poll before all of this blew up for Joe about being too touchy-feely. He was, according to this poll, by what, Fireside Strategies, I'm not sure. We didn't look into the the methodology too much, but showed him up 10 points over Donald Trump in Pennsylvania. Now, Joe is from Scranton, Pennsylvania, as he'll tell you 5 million times.
He could run as a favorite son there.
It kind of, yeah. I think though that it hurts him in Pennsylvania.
But how does Joe Biden overcome the Democratic Party absolute anti-coal attitude? Again, you've got some of these states where you've got coal miners, families, coal industry folks that will be wiped out of business the same way that Colorado's done as they take control. Now they're going after the oil and gas industry. They're going to put people out of work. You know, you can be a popular candidate in Pennsylvania or Colorado, but when people are unemployed because of your party's policies, that's tough to overcome.
Well, yeah, and plus, Obama declared war on coal, and Biden was vice president. President Trump has reversed that. So coal country likes Donald Trump.
Which would be Ohio, Pennsylvania.
West Virginia,
parts of Kentucky.
Yeah, parts of Kentucky.
Kentucky and West Virginia are pretty decidedly red. West Virginia wasn't a red state until the war on coal by the Democrats. So there's the war on coal in Ohio and in Pennsylvania. Keep those folks that are, again, blue-collar, white Democrats voting Republican.
Well, so the trouble for Joe is, I think this whole hands-on thing problem, the creepy Joe thing, would hurt him in not only the primaries, but also in the general election. So it's been a good week for Donald Trump.
But
I don't think Joe wants to say he's the hands-on candidate running in the Democrat Party now that you mentioned that, huh?
That's very good.
I'm going to be hands-on if I win.
I will say, though, that the biggest advantage that Joe Biden has is if he is perceived as the only guy who can beat Trump, I think Democrats will swallow battery acid if they think it's the way to beat Donald Trump. And if he's the guy that can beat Donald Trump, I don't care if he grips women on stage at every rally.
Right.
They'll be for him.
Well, his first accuser, Lucy Flores, the lieutenant governor candidate in Nevada, said as much the other day just after she accused him of being too hair sniffy.
If he can beat Trump, I'll let him grope me again. Yeah, we'll be back with more of the Battleground State Report in a moment.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com. That's battlegroundstatenews.com online, and you'll find links to some of the stories in these battleground states that we monitor each day. Also, go to Battleground State News on Facebook. If you've not already liked our Facebook page, be sure to get that done as well. One of the good omens for President Trump this week came in Wisconsin, where a Supreme Court race, it was a nonpartisan race, but it was a left versus right race in a state that the Democrats won a Supreme Court justice battle just like this by 12 points just a year or so ago. And the Democrats poured a ton of money. The liberals poured a ton of money figuring they could win another seat on the Supreme Court in Wisconsin, replace a conservative with a liberal. And yet, despite that 12-point victory just a year or so ago, and despite dramatically outspending the conservative judge, as a lot of conservative groups, a lot of Republican groups, did not spend money in Wisconsin because the judge that was running, the conservative judge, was seen as a social conservative. So some of the Republicans in name only, some of the moderate Republican groups decided to take a pass. Nevertheless, by about a half-point margin, it appears that he has won that seat. And that 12-point swing from a liberal justice winning to this narrow victory for a conservative may show that the pendulum is swinging in Wisconsin as folks are, getting a dose of reality of what liberal socialist advocating Democrats are really all about. The the numbers that this conservative judge pulled in Wisconsin just slightly above what Scott Walker received in votes just a year ago when Republicans lost the governor's race narrowly, also seeing a pickup of congressional seats in Wisconsin. Is this a good sign that Republicans may be seeing a rebirth in Wisconsin?
Well, there's one piece of information that does confirm the idea that this is a moving towards Trump in Wisconsin. National Review reports that one Republican GOP operative in Wisconsin told National Review that private polling in the closing weeks showed the conservative candidate, Hagedorn, trailing by mid to high single digits. So that suggests, if that's true, that there's been movement towards the Trump view of the world in Wisconsin over the past couple weeks.
And that would, of course, again, as you mentioned, Wisconsin, if it goes into the Republican column in the presidential race, if it goes for Trump, that probably means that Trump has fared well in Ohio and Michigan and other states. If Trump wins Wisconsin, he's almost certainly assured of winning the White House.
I'd say that's exactly correct, because if he wins Wisconsin, it does mean to me that probably he's won Ohio and most likely Michigan. Wisconsin is the most interesting of all these states that Trump won. I think we talked about this before. You know, the biggest surprise on election night was when they called Wisconsin for Trump even before they called Pennsylvania or Michigan.
They were just hoping against hope he wouldn't carry Pennsylvania. I mean, they were seeing the results. They just didn't want to admit them, and they were hoping that maybe there'd be a late surge of illegal votes or dead people voting at the end that could overcome the Trump margin, and it didn't happen. But you're right. They were holding back states at being called long after the margins were clear that they were going into the Trump column.
And
you know,
go ahead, Doug.
I was just going to jump in here. I was going to say I certainly agree. I think Wisconsin, if I were to bet today, not based on any surveys or anything, that Trump would win Wisconsin, he would win Ohio. Michigan, that's a tougher one. It was so close. And Pennsylvania, I think, are the other important states there. But what about an independent candidate? You know, Howard Schultz is getting now publicity on television. He got a whole night this week with the Fox News channel, right?
Why? Has he announced yet?
He's not even announced, so he has his own primary.
So why?
What's going on there, you think?
Why did Fox News devote a town hall to a guy who's not yet even declared he's going to run for president?
That's the question that I was kind of putting to you guys, because he's in a listening tour kind of thing, right? So, town hall meetings are usually based on candidates, you're right, that have already announced that they're, a primary coming up or something like that. So we've got this sort of unique aspect. He's not compelling to me necessarily, but I think, Steve, you mentioned Michigan, 100 votes, or 1,000 votes or whatever it was. It's not many. You have to swing, really, if you're moderate or something that says, well, here's a guy that's kind of Democrat. Yeah, he says he agrees with Donald Trump on the southern border and building the wall and all of this, but he's kind of socially liberal kind of thing. What do you think?
Well, and I think the other thing is whether Fox News is going to host these town halls for every Democrat candidate. I mean, is Eric Swalwell going to get his time? Tim Ryan, the congressman from Ohio that's just announced, is Pocahontas going to get her hour town hall on Fox News? I don't get what they're doing. But as you point out, this guy hasn't even announced. Why are they giving him the airtime? Now, I would like to believe that under the old Fox regime, they would be giving him airtime to try and give him a little boost to get in the race, because they believe that he will pull more Democrat votes in those key battleground states and give Trump a bigger margin in the Michigans, Wisconsin, and others, that as moderate Democrats in those states would say, I just can't go with this socialist, anti-American, racist, left-wing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, anti-Jewish, anti-Catholic push. I can't go with the Democrats, even though I almost always vote Democrat. Mm-hmm. And if they just pull some of those over, maybe it gives Trump a margin. I just don't think where Schultz pulls his votes at this point, and whether or not it affects the electoral viability in key battleground states for Trump or against him.
Something just popped in my head listening to you put this out. The Democrats have already said we're not going to do any debates with Fox News Channel during the campaign. They don't want to appear on them or anything. Maybe this, because Howard Schultz really is, in his heart, a Democrat, maybe this is a way to get back at the Democrats for saying, okay, we'll give him a lot of publicity. We'll give him, because he's more likely to take votes away from a Democrat than a Republican, correct?
That makes sense to me, Doug, what you've just said, that angle.
But it's which Democrats or is he likely to pull from? Is it Democrats that voted for Hillary Clinton last time, or is it Democrats that voted for Donald Trump? For example, you look in Ohio, in Youngstown, Ohio, and in parts of blue-collar battleground states of Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, you had Democrats who just they couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, and therefore they voted for Donald Trump. Do those Democrats that Trump counted on last time flop into a Schultz column and give the Democrats a slight edge in the remaining
votes?
Well,
let's think about that. Do you think this is something we're going to poll, I think, at Battleground State News, and particularly in Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio. You know, if you look at voting behavior, if we did a 2020 poll right now, and we put, let's say, Trump, Bernie, and Howard Schultz, those three. What do you think those results would show in those three battleground states, Steve?
Well, I think in some of those states you would see Schultz maybe pull more votes than a Bernie Sanders. But the question to me is, does he pull some from Donald Trump, and therefore, you know, again, I don't see Bernie Sanders, you know, being a real viable alternative. But if it's a Joe Biden, then it may be a different dynamic.
Let's actually look at this potential presidential matchup. We got the guy from Queens, New York, who made his fortune in Manhattan. We got the guy who grew up in the projects in, I think it was the Bronx, which was Howard Schultz. And then we got the socialist from Brooklyn, Bernie Sanders. It'll be a New York City election.
It's a mayor's race.
We're a long way from even knowing who the nominees will be and who's we're going to see people rise and fall among these 20-something Democrats that are running. They're going to get their time in the spotlight. Some of them are going to, you know, flail and fail and wilt under the spotlight. Others are going to thrive and continue on. The challenge is, can they raise money?
Yeah.
And can they raise money that is hard money that they can actually spend for
in
travel
primary,
and
yeah,
staff and
yeah,
those kind of things?
Yeah.
And again, you've got California that's early in the process. It's an extremely expensive state. You got Kamala Harris that'll have the edge there because she's already a statewide candidate. I think you've got a lot of these Democrats that are kind of running, hoping for favorite son, favorite daughter treatment in Ohio or these others, to Indiana, that they'll get enough votes to make them a player at a convention. But if the Democrats go into a convention and still don't have their candidate, I think that puts them behind the eight ball. I think that at the end of the day, people don't vote for spoilers. I think they vote for somebody they think who can win.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, Schultz may get a lot of attention, but when people actually have to choose, do I vote for the Democrat, do I vote for Trump, I think at the end of the day, most of them vote for people that they think can win, not some people they think will take votes away from somebody who can win.
Nobody thinks Howard Schultz can win.
So does he get the votes?
So why does he
when
run?
It comes to election?
Yeah.
Well, he gets attention, and maybe he sets himself up, and maybe at the end has an impact, but I'm not sure what his end game is. We'll talk more about it in a moment. This is the Battleground State Report, battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. We'll be right back.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back in. Steve Gill here, Michael Patrick Leahy, Doug Kellett with the Battleground State Report. As always, go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. We were talking about the Schultz plan. Doug, if by some miracle of miracle in national polls he catches fire as an independent third-party candidate, and you have he and President Trump and whoever the Democrats nominate from the extreme left all polling about 33%, equally dividing the American electorate across the country, you still have to look to how does it play in the patchwork quilt of state-by-state battles. And even if Schultz was somehow gathering 33% or 30% to be a factor nationally in national polls, what are the states he could win or take away from Trump that would help him or help the Democrats? Again, I just don't see any path to him winning enough states to get the electoral votes. And if he somehow throws it to the House and to the Senate, is there this expectation that they would then pick the independent rather than a Democrat or a Republican?
No, I agree with you. I don't see a state necessarily that he wins, right? And of course, you got to get electoral votes to win the presidency. He'd have to get electoral votes to stop either the Democrat or the Republican, I guess, from winning. I guess there is a
way
maybe
they
could
be deadlocked.
You know? Yeah, I was going to say. So from that standpoint, but my view on Schultz or someone like Schultz is that if they take just enough votes, you know, in a state like Michigan or Pennsylvania that we've talked so much about, or even Florida for that matter, just enough votes, it could sway it either for the Democrat candidate or the Republican candidate.
For
example,
but not for
Bernie
him.
For him, not at all. If Bernie Sanders was the nominee for the Democrat Party, then I think Trump would win hands down. I think most people would agree with that. But if it's, you know, someone else, Schultz might make a difference. Well, not for him to win, no.
Back to the point that you made, Steve, somebody's going to get 270. Well, that assumes that a Howard Schultz would not win a single Electoral College vote. Now, you know, when Perot ran in 92, he got 19% of the vote and not a single Electoral College vote. I don't see where Howard Schultz, where does he win an Electoral College vote?
He would have to win one of these like Maine, right? That's where they split up their electoral votes in these congressional districts.
Yeah.
He'd have to pull one congressional district from one of those kind of states.
I was just thinking the same thing. I think what he would do if he runs and he wants to be significant, he focuses effort on the eastern portion of Maine around Portland that's kind of lefty. And he tries to win that congressional district. Maybe if he poured all of his resources into that congressional district, he could win that one electoral college.
And then that depends on the other votes being split equally, where that one vote keeps anybody from getting the electoral majority needed, and therefore the Congress picks the president, in which case the Democrats and the Republicans who control Congress, whoever has the majority, picks their guy.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about Maine.
I was going to just jump in here real quick, guys. What about if, a situation where, as you're pointing out, I mean, if you don't really, you don't win a majority, but let's say the election is so ugly, Bernie Sanders calls Donald Trump every name and
he's already
the book
started
and,
that,
So if it gets to the point, is there, do either one of you see a situation where the electorate says, enough is enough? I don't know who this coffee guy is really, but I like his coffee, so I'll vote for him kind of thing.
Well, I don't know, but let me get back to with the thing about Maine. They've introduced this ranked voting system, right? Which means if you don't get 50% of the vote, they go through this elaborate mechanism whereby they decide, who gets that ranked voting system.
Which is being challenged in court.
Being challenged in court and may or may not end up being accepted. But can you imagine? Because if Schultz focused on that one district in Maine, he wouldn't get 50% of the vote because it would be the Democrat and Republican. So if he won, it would be 40%. And then they'd go into this ranked voting system, and nobody really knows how that all works. It's an elaborate algorithm.
Well, and the other bizarre aspect of this, again, is we're just sort of thinking through all the various permutations of what could happen. What is the impact of a third-party candidate like Schultz on congressional races? Again, he's not going to run a slate.
No.
So, are you going to see, again, a backlash against the Bernie Sanders and the Ocasio-Cortezes and the Pelosis and others? I mean, you've got some of these Democrats that are still trying to run away from the extremist left-wing policies. You had a Democrat woman, member of Congress this week, make it clear that I am for capitalism. I mean, you've got this division of policy that the Democrats are going to be eating each other alive during their primary. If that swings more votes and Republicans keep control of the Senate, take control back of the House, then again, if it gets thrown to the Congress, Trump's still president.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. How do you pronounce this mayor of South Bend? Everybody just calls him Mayor Pete because no one really knows how to pronounce his last name, I think. But I saw a story this week that the millennials apparently are all fired up about him. He's kind of like a rock star. He raised, what, $7 million in 24 hours kind of thing? Does that mean anything to either one of you?
He's having his moment, but there was a piece that I saw that said, he's 37 years old. he's gay, he's married to a gay guy, and that's the big deal about his campaign. His dad apparently was a Marxist professor at the University of Notre Dame, and that's sort of the background of the guy.
Well, he's got the resume then to win the Democrat nomination then, is what you're saying, right?
Exactly.
Again, all of these folks are going to have their time in the spotlight, and they're going to rise and fall based upon, you know, today's public opinion. This is like, again, we've talked about the Kardashianization of American politics. This is voting on Facebook. This is American Idol. You know, who gets people to call their number that week?
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily going to play, I think, in the long term with voters who are concerned about jobs, national security, illegal aliens flowing across the border, healthcare, actual legitimate issues, not just who's sort of the favorite brand of the week. This is also, I think, Schultz's problem and some of these others. It looks easy to run for president from the outside.
Yeah.
There are a million ways you can stumble, you can fumble, you can say something wrong, you can be tired, you can make a mistake. And all of these folks, when they get the spotlight on them, have not necessarily played in the major leagues before. They've played junior high basketball, and suddenly they're thrown in the NBA, and there's guys that are 7'6" that will just absolutely dunk over you. Schultz may be a great businessman, but we've seen time and time again that business acumen doesn't translate into political success. Ross Perot would be an example.
Yeah.
There are countless others. Donald Trump is a rarity. He is literally a white unicorn on steroids that to be able to translate that business and visibility of The Apprentice and other skills and just be the right guy at the right time and be able to defy gravity constantly, he is unique. And just because he's been able to do it doesn't mean other people can't.
Not only that, on the independent side, if you look at the difficulty, just the infrastructure difficulty of getting on the ballot in all 50 states, that is a huge undertaking for an independent.
And again, if he targets what states do I want to get on because those are ones I might be able to win, what are the states he might be able to win?
So where would you target? Now, that's a good strategy. Why, for instance, what benefit does he get for running in California, for instance?
Too expensive.
Too expensive, and he's not going to win it. I mean, maybe he goes to battleground.
Not going to win Wyoming. Okay, so where are the states he's got a chance to win?
I'll tell you what he does. The first thing he does is he goes to battlegroundstatenews.com. And he looks at our map of the 17 battleground states. That's what he does. He goes into those 17 states.
And then
states.
Overlay the marketing plans for Starbucks and figure out where do we sell the most coffee, where Starbucks is the most popular.
Exactly.
And find those particular areas.
So
I guess Washington, right? Seattle, now that you mention that, I guess that would be a possibility for him, maybe. But I'm with you. I just don't see a constituency out there necessarily. But the question would be, are people clamoring for a middle? You know, John Kasich, says this all the time, right? I think he's now on CNN or whatever. But I don't see a clamoring necessarily for the middle in our country right now.
So he's written this lame book called, Two Paths of America, and we shouldn't have two paths. We have one path of unity. That's just ridiculous. We got the people that love America, and we got the people that hate America.
Have we ever had one pass in this country ever? I mean, founding fathers didn't really. They scrapped at each other too, didn't they?
Yeah people forget that during the American Revolution, you had about a third of the country wanted to revolt and have independence. A third wanted to remain loyal to Britain, and a third were saying, "Whoever wins, I was with you all along."
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the American numbers constantly. You got about a third who are Democrats, about a third who are Republicans, and you got this 30% in the middle. That kind of swings around back
and
forth.
What's for dinner?
Who appeals to them? just this week, the statistics came out. We have the lowest unemployment rate in this country that we've had in 49 years. You're seeing wages go up. You're seeing the economy boom in the next few weeks. You're likely to see a trade deal with China, which probably leads to a resolution in some way of what's going on in North Korea. You're seeing successes economically, domestically, internationally. Again, the Democrats keep talking to each other about how awful Trump is, but if the American people are putting more money into their pockets, they're working instead of unemployed, they're seeing job economic growth giving them and their kids and their family more opportunities, it's going to be hard to get people to vote against more success.
Well, unless they're disconnected from reality, as the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez crowd is. You know, Doug, you talked about if it were a Bernie Sanders nominee, you think it would be a hands-down Trump victory. Maybe. what Bernie Sanders has is enthusiastic support from basically the uninformed part of our population.
Well, and the Obamas are pushing Kamala Harris because they see, you know, Obama in a dress. The only difference is that Obama apparently never actually slept with Willie Brown that we know of.
Yeah, I'll let you. I'll leave you out there on the edge on that one. But you know that's true. And then you got Beto, right? I mean, no one really knows what Beto's all about anyway. But he's raising a lot of money.
The clean teeth guy. He's got great teeth. He's with the clean teeth crowd.
Do we look at how much money you raise? Steve, you've been involved in campaigns. You've directed them and everything. Is it the amount of money translates to votes in some way? Or is it, I mean, is that indicative of who really is in front here?
Well, the early money is the easiest money to raise. So, I mean, they're getting the low-hanging fruit. They get their 7, they get their 10. I hate to break it to them, but, you know, running for president is a $100 million operation.
At least.
You got to raise 20 or 30 million just to ante up to get a seat at the table. And out of these 20 Democrat candidates, the vast majority of them, you know, 15 out of 20, aren't going to get past the $5 million mark in any significant way. And again, the Democrats are pouring a lot of money into races that are going to be spent against each other. That doesn't buy votes in the general election.
See, back to your pal Howard Schultz, it would seem to me, even though everybody's running to the left, with Biden now kind of maybe collapsing, his smart move would be to run in the Democratic primary because— You know,
fill the Biden void.
Fill the marginally sane Biden void.
I think it's too early to count Biden out. I think that you're going to see in the next few weeks he is going to actually announce. Yeah. He is going to raise a ton of money right out of the blocks.
Yeah.
The Democrats that are the same ones defending him right now are the ones that recognize he's the best shot to beat Trump, and they're going to gravitate. They're going to coalesce around him because they look at the rest of the crowd and say, great. You're creating excitement when you jump on a bar stool in a bar. You're creating excitement among the millennials. Millennials don't really vote.
They don't really. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they don't carry the weight needed to win. Again, particularly when you get a Democratic convention where you're going to have all these delegates divided all up among their favorites. And it's going to be chaos and fun to watch. I wouldn't count
indeed.
Biden out, though.
I think you're right.
Doug, Mike, we'll talk again next week. Folks, go to Battleground State News, battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, and we'll be back again next weekend.